You know, the offering that we have together, VMware Cloud and AWS, is very appealing to customers because it allows them to use the same software they've been using to manage their infrastructure for years to be able to deploy it in AWS. And we see a lot of customer momentum and a lot of customers using it. You see it in every imaginable vertical business segment, and the number of customers using the offering is doubling it every quarter. So people are really excited about it.
And today, we're announcing M5.
Yeah, well, two of the most important priorities for customers are cost and performance. On the storage side, we've combined the elasticity of Amazon Elastic Block Store, or EBS, with VMware's vSAN, and we've provided now a storage option that it's very high capacity and be much more cost-effective for storage or memory-intensive workloads. It's something that you guys have asked for, it's been very frequently requested, and very, very exciting new capabilities to show deep integration between the companies.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 104. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, happy Friday, buddy.
Hey, it's good to be Friday, so.
Absolutely. So... even though we're recording this on a Wednesday. But hey, it's Friday when it gets out, so happy Friday, buddy.
You confused me for a second. Then, for some reason, that terrible Rebecca Black song got stuck in my head for about 5 seconds. So.
Yeah. Well, dude, it's Friday. We try to release these on Fridays, and so we're gonna pretend that it's Friday. This is a great one because this Friday specifically, also tied to sort of an announcement, VMware Cloud on AWS is coming out with some mild announcements, and I want to talk to my buddy Glenn Sizemore about that because Glenn always has the info when it comes to VMware Cloud on AWS specifically. When it comes to the nuts and bolts of the storage portion. So let's welcome my good friend, Glenn. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, how we doing, guys? I'm here. I'm coffeed up. I'm ready to go. Let's talk Patriots football.
That concludes the podcast. I don't even want to get into that horrible call for the Saint game. I don't even want to get involved with the Edelman. Did he touch the ball? Whatever. We're not going to get into any of that. We're just going to talk tech.
All right, if you insist.
Awesome. So, Glenn, let's see. Last time we had you on was back in March on episode 73. You talked all about there was a cloud launch, and you talked all about sort of what was new in VMware Cloud on AWS. Great episode for those of you that want to catch up. But this episode, we've got some new information coming out as it pertains to some of the offerings around VMware Cloud. So, yeah, we want to talk to you about those. Like one thing I heard about was Elastic vSAN. There's some new updates to encryption and single node vSAN. So, tons of stuff coming out. If you're not reading Virtual Blocks, you need to. Because Glenn, you've been putting out massive content out there. You've been doing, you've been participating in that Storage Minute series where we kick out these little 1 minute summaries of what a certain tech is. Those videos, I think, are pretty awesome. You've been hitting blog after blog out there on VMware Cloud, talking about the single host, talking about 10 terabytes of a VM into a 5 terabyte cloud. You've been pretty diligent on the blogging aspect as well. So I'm going to be sure to leave links to all your blogs and videos on the show notes of this podcast. All right. So why don't we do this then? Let's start with a quick explanation of what VMware Cloud on AWS is, and then we can dive into some of the new updates that are coming out this week.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, as always, because as we discussed last time I was on here, VMware Cloud on AWS, for those of you who aren't familiar, very quickly, is a managed service that is sold, delivered, and operated by VMware, where we are delivering the VMware vSphere suite of products. So this is vSphere, vSAN, and NSX on top of bare metal hardware inside Amazon's cloud.
Yep.
So it's the ability to just show up, have credit card, and purchase a production-ready vSphere environment anywhere in the world. So over the past year and a half that the service has been out in market, we have our standard host type and fixed configurations, 10 terabytes of data storage per host, and our clusters scale from 3 to 16 hosts per cluster, and you can have multiple clusters inside a single software-defined data center. So a lot of flexibility from a configuration side. We found a tremendous amount of uptake in enterprise customers, right? VMC is solving a very real problem for customers, both in the ability to project a point of presence into a given in geography through AWS, and also just as a means to quickly get that production-ready vSphere environment. But it is a new product. It is a new offering. So we have been going through some pretty rapid growing pains and some pretty rapid iterations as we discover where the holes in the service are, the capabilities that customers still desire, and the things that they need. So you mentioned a couple of those. The first one came back. It's about 4 or 5 months ago, and that's our single host vSAN offering.
Yeah, the name alone makes people stop and say, "Wait, hold on a second. That's nothing like I've been reading about, that I've heard about. What is this single node crap?"
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I specifically wanted to call it out, because one of those things that we hear, especially on the vSAN side of the house from time to time, is, can I run a single node? Can I use a single host and still run vSAN? And on premises, our answer there has been, well, no, we don't support that. We don't allow you to do that. But under the covers, we've always known that the answer is yes, you can actually do it. It does work, right?
Yeah.
The problem is, with a single host, vSAN is limited to effectively a single fault domain. So there's no way for us to make data highly available, right? If we were to suffer any catastrophic failures with that single host, we would be looking at a data loss scenario. So traditionally, this is not a workflow that works for us. But when we take a look at VMware Cloud on AWS, we're looking at a different thing, right? We're looking at a product that is instantiated from nothing and is rapidly capable of scaling up and back down, right? So we've got bidirectionally scalability on demand. And more importantly, it is kind of a premium offering, right? It's a managed service. So we needed a way for customers to be able to come in the front door and bring their actual workload to us so that they could bring their real apps, bring their actual applications, their network, their security teams, and let them interact with a live VMware Cloud on AWS environment and just prove to themselves, right, whether or not the service was going to work. Not necessarily a proof of concept, right? But more of a proof of value, because this is a managed service and there is a premium on top of it. We want to prove that we are actually fulfilling and earning that upcharge that is associated with the service. So single host vSAN gave us a platform to be able to bring customers in, go ahead and start to use the service, and then leveraging that elasticity of the Amazon Cloud in conjunction with the composability of vSAN and the shared nothing object store that it is, we can seamlessly in place upgrade these environments from single host instances to multi-host instances. And that's really where this is. This is not a single host production environment. It's a start with one node, figure out whether or not you like it. If you like it, you go ahead and scale up in place and we bring you up to a 3-node environment. At that point, you're fully production ready, highly available. We have multiple fault domains, et cetera, et cetera. If you don't like it, you just go ahead and delete it and tear it down.
One thing that's interesting is, once you go from that test to that prod, you go to a 3-node cluster. Just thinking about that, historically, some people, when they look at vSAN as their starting point, they look, 3 is obviously the minimum for mirroring. You've got to mirror the data, then have a witness component. But some people will like to sometimes start with 4 just because then you've got that extra place to handle a failure.
Yep.
But this is, the failure handling is a bit different on VMC. So that 3-node cluster is actually, the resiliency factor is going to be a bit different, right?
Yeah. So this is the advantage of a managed service, right? Because we are plugged into Amazon's global fleet. We basically are using the entirety of AWS as our compute pool that we're pulling from when we're building these composable clusters. So when we build a 3-node cluster, if we have a node inside that cluster that starts to experience issues and we need to lifecycle it, we simply pull a new one in from that fleet and lifecycle it out. So customers, when they're inside the service, they only ever run clusters at the capacity they need to support their workload, right? VMware Operations actually handles all the excess swing capacity that we need, both from just basic host maintenance. So as we do patching and host upgrade cycles, we'll just roll in new hardware. Customers don't pay for that excess hardware, by the way. In addition, when we have failures, we'll also roll in replacement hardware automatically. So the customer just tells us how many nodes they need to support it, and then they walk away and let us deal with it from there.
The traditional admission control concept, which is a feature of VMware HA, where you would say reserve one host or two hosts for the capacity that N+2 design, that's completely made obsolete by the fact that you can just snap your fingers and hardware appears out of thin air to handle failures.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get into it a little bit later when we start talking about Elastic vSAN, but we've actually taken this to the nth degree and broken out the difference between when you're looking at a vSphere vSAN cluster. There's really two different components of that cluster, right? There's the vSphere side the compute memory scheduler, keeping the virtual machine running and accessing the core resources it requires. And then there's the data storage persistence side, which is, you know, vSAN, shared nothing object store, managing the component objects on the back end. There are actually instances where we will pull hardware in to replace the CPU and memory independent of the storage when needed. So it's a very intelligent system that is fully aware of what the cluster needs. And as a customer, you don't think about any of this stuff, right? You just show up and say, I need 480 vCPUs. I have a terabyte of memory and I have 8 terabytes of data storage. VMware, just keep this available and let me worry about my business.
So let's go back to that single node for a minute. When we're talking about failure handling, are there differences in the way a single host is going to handle failure versus, say, a three-node cluster?
Yeah, so great question. So those single host instances, those are only to be used for proof of value trials, right, to experience the service. We don't put production data on there because any loss is the potential for permanent data loss because we only have a single host and
it's RAID zero, baby.
Yeah, it's RAID zero inside RAID AWS. Zero.
What do you expect? You know, you got no mirroring.
So. YOLO.
Yeah, exactly.
YOLO in the data center.
But it's a YOLO with the ability to do an in-place upgrade to enterprise ready, which is a big, big, big difference, right? Because you don't have to go back and from an administrative position, we don't need to go back and redeploy. We don't need to reprovision. We don't need to rethink about. We just click a button and we upgrade the SCDC from trial to production and the service handles the rest.
So this was always something back in my VDI days, I would go on a big thing is people would ask me like, we want to do a proof of concept. I'm like, I hate proof of concepts because all a proof of concept is let's set something up. Let's validate that, you know, in theory, the technology installs and you can connect to a desktop. And then we throw this away versus a pilot, which was my distinction that, you know, maybe I'm wrong on my word choice here, but a pilot is something that I can test and I can scale linearly into production. And so it's worth noting that this is a pilot environment, you know, outside of resiliency testing and resiliency capability, but performance and, you know, compute's going to scale linearly and capacity's going to scale linearly when I go from 1 to 3. So,
yeah, absolutely. And that's why we use the language proof of value, right? Because we don't want to confuse people. Unfortunately, a lot of customers overload terms like pilot, proof of concept, POC, et cetera. So we just decided to use a unique term and explain what we think it means.
No, that's cool. So getting back though to like the economics of that scaling method and that failure handling, going back to that N+1 thought, if you want to compare this apples for apples, if you look back in a traditional environment, it's very common. So let's say you operate on a 5-year hardware refresh cycle. A lot of people would buy all their capacity for the next 5 years at once. They'd buy all the storage, they'd buy all the compute, they'd buy all the hosts. So let's say you only need 4 hosts today, but you're going to need to add a host every 3 months or so for additional load or something. So, you know, 4 hosts a year, 5 years, you'd be buying 20 hosts up front that you didn't need versus the alternative of, you know, scaling as you need. And that's a pretty rapid scaling, you know, example. But if you think about, you know, time value of money and all these other terms, these are the benefits if you know you have some type of linear growth of moving to a cloud model.
Yeah. And we have customers that take it even beyond that, right? Because we have customers that have seasonality demand. And one of the core use cases for VMware Cloud and AWS is to be used as an extension of an on-premises existing environment expand capacity when needed seasonality, right? So go ahead and if your steady state is the equivalent of 6 vSphere hosts, go ahead and stand that up, put it in your on-premises data center, call it a day. And then at this point, we have customers that are leveraging VMC in some very clever ways, you know, using vSphere site recovery to use VMC as a secondary DR target site, and then also oversubscribing and leveraging that DR target site as expansion capacity to dynamically be able to swing workload up into the AWS cloud as needed. And then, you know, customers that find themselves in that particular scenario, they're effectively free from restrictions. You know, if the business comes to them tomorrow and says, we need to stand up 10,000 machines in Asia Pacific, it doesn't matter that they don't have any data centers there. It's a 2-hour operation. 2 hours from now, they have it.
Yeah, in my opinion, that's the major draw to VMware Cloud on AWS versus other solutions, because we're talking about the infrastructure that you're working in your core, and you're extending that, right? So you have the ability with this hybrid link mode to actually extend to not only to the cloud using AWS, but also to the edge as well, right?
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the storage minute series. That was one of the more fun ones that we did, and it's making that specific point. You know, because we've got this platform in vSphere vSAN, and it gives us consistency both in administrative models as well as a consistent runtime in vSphere and the VMDK formats, it makes it very easy for us to move workload anywhere in that environment, right? We can host it in a core data center. We can ship it off to a robo edge on a two-node vSAN deployment. And then we can very easily pull that into the cloud directly if we want to. And at no point in time do we ask customers to redeploy, re-architect, rethink, right? They just simply, if they want to, do a shared nothing vMotion from one spot to the next and don't even think about it.
No, that is cool.
Yeah, and this also works with vSAN Stretch Cluster, right? Is that the same as vSAN Stretch Cluster, or is it just VMware Cloud on AWS Stretch Services?
Yeah, great question. So yes, we do support Stretch Clusters. We do make use of Stretch Clusters. The way that they're manifest inside of the VMware Cloud and AWS service is kind of unique, right? Because one of the, of course, we have these auto remediation services, right? So when we deploy our clusters, as we already discussed, you as a customer, you just set how much total capacity and aggregate you want. You don't have to add additional capacity for, you know, spare hosts or maintenance or any of that stuff. Right, we're going to add those dynamically as needed. So whilst that works great, anyone who's familiar with Amazon will then ask the follow-on question and say, well, okay, but where are these hosts? And you start pulling it apart and you go, well, okay, well, they're in Amazon region, okay, in a single availability zone. So that, of course, means that if Amazon were to suffer one of their very rare but real, it happened last week, AZ failures, then, of course, anything running in that availability zone is going to go down. So customers come to us and say, okay, but what if I have workloads that can't deal with that? What if my workload needs to stay up? And this is where Stretch Clusters come in for us. So if we have customers that want to bring those business critical applications into a VMware Cloud and AWS environment, and they're not comfortable with the three nines of availability that Amazon provides for any workload running inside AWS, we can deploy instead of a standard cluster inside a single AZ, we will deploy a stretched cluster, which will stretch that vSphere deployment across multiple AZs, right, using vSAN to mirror the data in between those AZs synchronously to keep the data synchronized. And then in the event of an AZ failure, it's just a simple vSphere HA event. And as I said, we've already proven this in production, right? We've had production AZ restarts due to just transient failures because it is the cloud. This is the one part, the one thing that makes Amazon special, right? It's cheap, it's seemingly endless, and it's ubiquitous. It's got everything you need, but it does fail. So you have to have something to deal with those failures. And the beauty of VMC is we completely abstract all that complexity away. You just bring your vSphere workload and it continues to work with the same reliability that customers have come to depend on.
Yeah, well, you said cheap and, you know, part of me kind of tilted my head sideways and said, you know, saying cheap is one thing, but a lot of people will come back and be like, cheap, but it's also, you know, the Hotel California. Is it cheap to get in, expensive to get out? Well, what about, you know, large capacity data? Would I be, does it make sense to put this in a cloud or should that still be on-prem and then, you know, manage my workloads in a hybrid mode? So is it really cheap? I mean, it's certainly cheap for scaling compute and it's a beautiful thing to actually spin up on demand hardware, but is it really cheap as it pertains to capacity?
Well, great question. So you know, when you start making claims like that, you very quickly find yourself in a total cost of ownership conversation.
Yeah.
And this is really tricky because the answer is it really does depend, and it depends on what the customer does with everything else. VMware Cloud has the potential to significantly simplify a customer's operations and procurement process. You know, you just remove all of the data center operations, all of the work that typically is associated with maintaining those hardware refreshes, with managing those assets, right? And instead, you just convert it into a monthly reoccurring OpEx charge. Now, if you don't have to also maintain all of those existing on-premises resources, then of course it's cheaper. But if we have to maintain all those on-premises resources and we're just using VMC as an extension, well, then, you know, it's a premium extension of an existing enterprise. So it really does depend on the typical customer. We have customers who have saved money moving into VMC. We also have customers who are paying more today, but they did so because they've increased their level of service. They have a premium offering for their own customers.
Right.
And VMC gives them some capability that they otherwise would not have.
Yeah, the short answer, right, could possibly be that it might be slightly more expensive, but then that's, you're not factoring anything. Like the OpEx cost, the ability to actually have people that manage this, recovery. There's so many different factors as it pertains to even the time and money and energy it takes to actually have hardware hardware spec'd, provisioned, deployed, and you know, time is money. So yeah, I guess that's a really complicated question to compare one for one something like this that's just seamlessly on demand compared to doing it a manual way.
Yeah, I don't want to sit here and try to like wave the flag and be like, I'm the cloud guy. The cloud is the answer to everything, because it isn't, right? I'll be the first one to admit that the cloud, it solves a lot of problems when it's used intelligently, but it can also create a ton of problems when it's used inappropriately.
Sure.
Right. And this is one thing that we saw in the data storage industry 5-6 years ago. There was the great repatriation event after, you know, businesses had moved all of their data into Glacier because they were sure that this was going to be the affordable way to store it. And then they started getting those reoccurring monthly charges on, you know, damn near petabytes of data. And it turns out it adds up over time. So it's not always cheaper. It will always depend on the scenario. In the case of VMC, though, you bring up an interesting point, and I'm going to follow it for a second because I would like to talk about this. Actually ties into our new offering, Elastic vSAN. When you're looking at the VMware Cloud on AWS, one of the places where the service will actually become problematic from an affordability perspective is on those capacity heavy workloads, because the current service works off of an HCI scale model. So we have a single host type. That host has 36 physical cores, 512 gigabytes of memory, a single 25 gigabyte Elastic network adapter, and then 10 terabytes of NVMe SSD capacity. Okay. That is our host. So when you come into the VMware Cloud and AWS service, the only thing that you tell us is how many of those hosts you would like. If you have 40 terabytes of data, you're going to need 4 of them, right?
Got it.
40 terabytes of capacity. So this becomes a problem when you start talking to customers who have petabytes of data.
Yeah, that doesn't scale.
Yeah. Yeah. How do I get petabytes of data in a cluster that scales from 30 to 160 terabytes? The answer is I can't. So we've had to go back and reevaluate how we were going to handle these capacity-centric workloads, right? Workloads that are mainly data lakes. They don't have a huge read-write requirement, but there's a massive capacity requirement associated with them. This, of course, also has other challenges because we do exist inside Amazon. When I first heard this challenge, I, of course, just assumed that we would go to Amazon and say, hey, Amazon, we need a new host. Can you give us a host with 40 terabytes of capacity or more, right?
Change the specs on the host, yeah.
Yeah, why not, right? They're Amazon. We're VMware. We can make it happen. The problem is when you start to really pull it apart, though, what you discover is the VMC service is already running about as large of a host as is technically feasible. 10 terabytes is about as much capacity as we can cram into a single host and still make it supportable. Once you get north of that, it's no longer supportable simply because these are shared nothing platforms, which means that when a piece of hardware starts to fail, the only way to re-protect it is to copy the data off of that failing hardware. Well,
and so you become bound by your NIC interface speed and the network on the back end, which we're not going to see that changed, you know.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, Amazon may have already upgraded their internal data center networking. We honestly don't know. It's a black box to us. All we know is we've got a 25 gigabyte Elastic network adapter into that EC2 host. And that's what all of our traffic is.
That's what we get. Yep.
Yeah. So that's our bottleneck. So how do we significantly increase the amount of capacity that we can put on a given host if we can't also increase the amount of network capacity for us to be able to handle recoveries? That was the challenge that the team was handed. And after a lot of engineering, a lot of trials, a lot of really thinking about it, they just went completely out of the box. And finally, someone threw their hands up in the air and said, what if we didn't have any storage in the box? What if we used external storage? What if we just separated the storage from the compute entirely? And that was the beginning of the process that led to Elastic vSAN.
Hmm. Same specs of the host minus the storage?
So originally, that is what we were thinking. We ended up actually going with a larger host for some different reasons. But originally, the intent was, let's just separate these two. Let's split CPU and memory from storage in a host definition perspective, right? Not in a how do you run it, how do you maintain it, how do you manage it perspective. All of that's still going to use the same HCI constructs that we know and love. But from a ordering perspective, let's give customers the ability to customize the amount of storage that they would put on a per node basis, just like they have on premises today. Right? When you deploy vSAN on premises, you don't just call Dell and get the one server that supports vSAN, right? You put the appropriate amount of capacity on a per host basis, depending on your sizing.
Of course, yeah.
There's one ready node to rule them all. That's you got an HCL. Yeah, here's the box.
Like, yeah.
This isn't even like a Cisco ASA where there's four models. Like, nope, there's one.
The vSAN server. One.
You want more than eight cores? Go to hell. Like,
So Amazon...
No storage for you. We need, exactly. We need the storage, the soup Nazi.
Exactly. But so Amazon actually already has a way to deal with this problem, right? Inside their portfolio, they have Elastic Block Storage.
Oh, yeah.
Elastic Block Storage, of course, is an Elastic, a pool of Elastic Cloud Storage, which is presented as a block device. Now, one of the things that makes EBS unique is inside Amazon, the way that it's actually implemented uses proprietary protocols, proprietary interfaces, and everything. It's not actually part of the host spec, but at the end of the day, when you're done provisioning your EBS volumes, they appear as though it's a local NVMe device to the host OS. So even though we are taking and building this composable vSphere device, right? A customer comes in the front door and they say, I want to use, instead of using your i3 local SSD host with 10 terabytes, I want to use your new R5 metal host, right? Which has no local storage. And then I'm going to define how much capacity I want on that host, varying from 15 all the way up to 35 terabytes per host. So we've increased the capacity 3.5 folds. All of that is still, at the end of the day, when you're done deploying your cluster, it still looks as though it's local storage. vSAN is still vSAN. Nothing has really changed. Everything still behaves the same. It still looks the same. It's managed the same.
Just but got because, some NVMe devices that technically don't belong on the physical host.
Yeah, but here's the important part. Because they aren't on the physical host, when we encounter a host failure event, when we encounter something going bad on that hardware,
yeah.
Instead of having to replace the entire host and relocate the data, we can instead move those EBS volumes from the failing host to a new host and completely remove all of the data migration activities, which were typically part of our host replacement. And it's this core ability. It's the ability to pick up those EBS volumes, detach them from the current vSphere host, and reattach them to a new vSphere host, seamlessly moving all of the data which was on that host, while still being able to use policy-based management and all of the same core management constructs. It really has freed the architecture for those capacity-bound workloads.
I was going to ask, does that, not only handling failure, but like say patch lifecycle, you want to bring in a new version, you could just swap the hosts out and be done with it, so to speak, rather than have to take a host offline, patch it, and do the traditional remediation workflow. There's a lot of interesting opportunities of separating state with an endless pool of nodes to pull from behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's that, and that's how the system works, right? The system works by we will introduce a swap host, right? Go ahead and pulling from that Elastic pool. We'll introduce a swap host, which will add the CPU and memory capacity for the cluster. And then we simply remove the host, which is being upgraded, and add it back in, reattaching those EBS volumes. So the only time that we actually have to do data rebuilds in Elastic vSAN deployments is when an EBS volume actually fails, which is very rare because they are highly available, they are durable under the covers inside Amazon. But EBS does have a 1% annual failure rate across their entire fleet. So failures do occur, and we have accounted for that. If we do lose an EBS volume, then we will have to rebuild the disk group, but it's only on that single disk group. And again, from a capabilities perspective, this has moved the workload target from the maximum target we could realistically support being at about 100 terabytes, right? We've moved it from 100 terabytes all the way up to about 300 terabytes from a realistic perspective.
That's pretty awesome.
300 terabytes is a pretty good cluster size. I mean, at that point, do I really want any more data in a fault domain? Starts to become the meta question I have to ask myself.
Well, it's the question we asked ourselves initially, and I can tell you that the answer from customers is yes. So this is our starting capability. This is our starting point. The beautiful thing, though, is because this is all built from composable foundational services inside AWS, right? Where the EC2 host that we're installing vSphere onto is an EC2 hardware. The EBS volumes that we're attaching to that EC2 host is just standard EBS volumes. As Amazon continues to advance their foundational capabilities, we will be able to leverage those inside VMC. So when they introduce a new tier of EBS that has a new tier of capabilities from a performance and throughput standpoint, we'll be able to seamlessly consume those inside the service. As they adjust the cost for long-term EBS and GP2 becomes something else, if it eventually migrates, and IOC becomes something else, then it's pretty simple for us to migrate and advance the service to include, offering bigger capacity points. There's qualifications and work to be done. It's not free, but you can look at the architecture and see how this architecture frees VMware to work inside Amazon's cloud services and offer customers this composable ability where they can continue to use the service using those trusted HCI control points, but do so in a manner where they can define what they need from the service more succinctly to control costs. Because that's the problem today. Customers are already solving this problem. But today, when we run into these capacity-bound use cases, customers end up having to add hosts for storage reasons. And again, it's a premium service. So when you're adding a host for storage reasons, there's a lot of cost associated with that. We don't want to add hosts unless we're also going to be using some memory and CPU.
Oh, yeah. That makes perfect sense.
I mean, I can think of all kinds of other things, like eventually looking at the performance characteristics and saying, hey, there's this new faster version of EBS. Do you want an upgrade, you know, and have it hit a slow drain, end drain of that. There's all kinds of different ways to abstract that. Let's take a step back, though, and talk about customers who aren't using VMC and will never use VMC. How do they benefit from all this?
That's a great question. Like all things, right? My short answer to this is that VMware Cloud has introduced the same sort of operational responsibility into VMware that we traditionally associate with Agile or DevOps in our customers. Right. When you start running your own product as a managed service directly attached to your customer base, then your site reliability engineers that are supporting that frontline service, they are feeling the pain that the customers that buy your software feel. And when they start complaining about things not working the way that they want them to,
yeah,
it just makes it a lot easier to reprioritize and retask. So we've already seen a number of enhancements come to on-premises vSAN and vSphere because of VMC acting as a forcing function for us to either just, you know, for example, per VM EBC, it's a little thing, but, you know, on-premises...
God, I wanted that for years.
Yeah, customers always wanted it, right? But the reality is on-premises customers have had the ability to build clusters around our limitations. Well, when we're looking at a service pulling hardware out of Amazon, EVC as designed no longer worked, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
It required a new model, and that's where we get. So I do think that without getting into the nitty-gritty and calling out specifics, I can absolutely ensure that even if you're never going to touch VMC, you should be very happy that customers are, because it is pulling the quality of our entire stack up.
It's basically the engineering leaders have to sit there and say, do we want to throw more SREs at this workaround or this bug, or do we want to re-engineer this and fix this?
Oh, yeah.
That's always a very simple, you know, at a certain point that quickly becomes very simple financial math of we need to engineer this right solution. And it makes the support costs basically a direct cost of the engineering groups. It's an interesting construct of how this, you know, this DevOps Agile for, you know, an infrastructure engineering company operates.
Absolutely. I like that. And as a matter of fact, that transitions me to the final thing I wanted to touch on, which is if you've been looking at VMware Cloud on AWS, you don't have to guess what the roadmap is. VMware Cloud on AWS is doing something that I haven't seen anyone else do, to be quite frank. They have their roadmap on public display on VMware Cloud. So you just go to cloud.vmware.com and click on roadmap, and it's got an amazing frame to the left that you can sort between available, preview, developing, and planned. And just you can literally filter and see what's on the horizon, what's going on. And so I was doing that before the call, and I was like, man, they're definitely forward thinking. So yeah, this benefits people that are using VMware Cloud on AWS. And Glenn, like you said, this definitely affects all vSAN customers in general. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, it's that roadmap is one of my favorite things as well. It's not 100% everything. There's some stuff that, particularly stuff that involves other partners, right? Sure. Anything that's exclusively VMware is on that roadmap. If we own it, it's on there. But some of the stuff that involves partners is not. But I do love the fact that we're able to take this public position with the service and be as transparent as we are. The thing that I'm constantly reminding our internal folks is one of the things that, because this is a service, right? Typically, we're so used to talking about futures and what we're working on, because with on-premises customers, that's the big challenge is communicating your vision, right? Where the product is headed so that they can figure out whether or not this is the right platform for them to invest in today. With a service, it's different though, right? You're not communicating futures as much as just talk about current capabilities, because the point of this is to solve problems right now, not 2 days from now, right? If you don't need it right now, don't deploy it yet. Deploy it when you actually need it.
Oh, yeah. All right. So, Glenn, we're out of time. Thank you for coming. If you want to learn more about VMware Cloud on AWS, use Google. You can also go to storagehub.vmware.com and check VirtualBlocks, because there are a ton of blog posts, lots of information on VirtualBlocks, where we're sharing all about regular vSAN, but also VMware Cloud on AWS. So as we take off, John, anything for Glenn before we take off?
That's all I got.
All right. That music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this in all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Mr. Glenn Sizemore for joining us today and schooling us on VMware Cloud on AWS. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now. Glenn, I got all nervous doing the outro with you on the call because, fun fact, when we used to do our old podcast, I used to mess up the outro. Like, I used to have to do it like 10 times. And so I saw you and there was like a mental break where I was like, uh-oh, you're going to mess it up.
You know what? It is because of all those times that we just started to write it down and make people read scripts.
Exactly.
Wait, you guys made people read a script?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, my old show, if you go back and listen to it, the outro is the same every time. And this is
why. Practice makes perfect, my friend. Even though we're recording this on a Wednesday. But hey, it's Friday when it gets out, so happy Friday, buddy.
You confused me for a second. Then, for some reason, that terrible Rebecca Black song got stuck in my head for about 5 seconds. So.
Who?
It's Friday, Friday.
Enough of this jibber jabber.